welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting shows from radio's past. I'm your host, Mark Livonier. Coming up in this hour, horror. Later on, The Birds is adapted on Escape. But right now, The Creaking Door, a 1950s broadcast hailing from South Africa, an episode called The Carts.
I have flown. I have sailed. I have moved about this world of ours, and ever in search of the finest of its kind, we bring you the tops in Spine Chillers. The Creaking Door.
To live it up a little. As a matter of fact, it's rather a dead end. What could be more harmless than a village fate? Run by the vicar for charity. The little tents and sideshows, the jumble sale, the village ladies all working hard to help the needy. What a pity our little fate may turn out to be a fate worse than death.
It all looks so jolly this year, Mrs. Matthews.
And the weather's been so kind. Vicar, we've been very lucky. Oh, do please have your fortune told before you leave us, won't you? Mrs. Heyman is telling the fortunes this year, and she's working so hard.
Well, you know, I've always been rather reserved about having fortunes told at our annual fest.
Oh, it's only in fun. Who could be more devout than Mrs. Heyman?
Oh, very well. As you say, it's all in a good cause.
Come on, ladies, have your fortunes told. Cross the old gypsy's arm with silver.
Afternoon, Vicar. Going splendidly, isn't it?
You're all making it go splendidly, my dear Mrs. Heyman. I've come to have my fortune told, by the way.
Come into the tent, Vicar. You know, I couldn't get a crystal ball, so I substituted a pack of tarot cards. Oh, do sit down.
Yeah, thank you. Of course, you know the theory behind this kind of divination.
I don't know anything about it at all.
It's so old that the primitive African witch doctor uses the principle when he throws the bones. Yes, it's very ancient. And very evil.
Oh, well, my dear Vicar, this is one of those occasions on which out of great evil cometh great good, isn't it? Charity will benefit after all. Now, one spreads the cards out like this.
Oh, there's man's fate, the hanging man, suspended by his feet from a gibbet. The wheel of fortune. It's all symbolic, of course. There is the devil. And there is death. Very interesting to a student of comparative religion, of course.
Well, I don't understand anything about it. It's just a game.
A nasty game. Unless done in the name of charity, when we all understand the whole thing is merely a joke. The idea was the spirits, evil spirits, take possession of the diviner. In this case, you, Mrs. Haven, and spell out the future through the cards. A ridiculous notion, of course.
Well, I've got a little book here that tells the combination. Now, in the first place, you're unmarried.
Oh, everybody knows that I'm unmarried.
Oh, please, Vicar, let's try to preserve something of the atmosphere. There. You're going on a long voyage.
But everybody knows I'm visiting the mission stations in Tanzania.
You will meet a tall, blonde woman, a widow. And there are prospects of romance.
Oh, unlikely. Unlikely for me.
Oh, yes. There, you see, you're going to cross water, and there is the prospect of an inheritance. Oh. Fear death by fire. Fear that which flies in the air, but is not a bird. Fear the things of night, the bat, the wolf, the leper. Speak only truth, or evil will strike you. Oh,
please, wake up, Mrs. Haven. Wake up. Oh, mercy me. She seems to have fallen into some kind of trance.
For the shuttle flies back and forth, and the thread is spun into the lives and deaths of men. Fear the flash of fire. Fear the high face of the sun at noon. Fear the agents of the dark. Fear the man with a skull's face.
My dear Mrs. Haven, please. Oh, dear, I must get help. Help! Extraordinary business, Mr. Matthews.
A sort of possession by spirits, eh?
Well, I wouldn't go as far as to say that.
No, probably the spirits came out of a bottle.
So far as I know, the lady has never let a drop of spirituous liquor pass her lips.
Only joking, Vicar.
But it is most uncanny. Mrs. Hayman went into a trance of some kind. Excuse me, I'd better go to inquire if she's fully recovered. Are you feeling better now, Mrs. Hayman?
Oh, it was only the heat. I am sorry.
It must have been a most unpleasant experience. Tell me, can you remember exactly what occurred?
Well, I was telling your fortune, and I must... Well, I've simply passed out, that's all.
You seemed to go into some kind of trance. Do you remember what you said?
Oh, it was some nonsense I was making up.
You said, fear death by fire. Fear that which flies in the air but is not a bird.
No.
Fear the things of night, the bat, the wolf, and the leopard. Speak only truth, or evil will strike you.
Oh, I'm sure I did.
Well, I can assure you that you did, Mrs. Haven. I feel that something caused you to give me a warning, something connected with those evil tarot cards. But what could the warning mean?
It all sounds most outlandish to me.
Fear death by fire. Well, that's plain enough. Fear that which flies in the air but is not a bird. Oh, why, that would be an aeroplane.
Of course. Your trip to Tanzania. You must cancel it at once.
Oh, my dear Mrs. Hayman, I can hardly see myself explaining to the bishop that I must take the warning of a pack of cards rather than the evidence of my senses. No, I shall travel as scheduled. And I'd be greatly obliged if you'd refrain from mentioning this matter to anyone, at least until I've arrived safely at my destination.
Oh, Vicar, do take care.
Of course. And I hope to see you at the mission meeting on Thursday. Then I shall outline the purposes of my visit.
But of course I shall be there. The whole village will.
Yes, I know. You're all very loyal to me.
Without further ado, I'm going to ask the Reverend John Simmons to tell us about his coming visit to Tanzania.
Well, you all know the story. Tom Shelby was born in this village. He was a wayward boy, but did splendidly in the war. Later, he became a prospector in darkest Africa, but he never forgot his home village.
Yeah, yeah.
After the famous diamond find by Dr. Williamson, Tom Shelby took a quick look at the Ubongi district and discovered the fabulous Shelby Diamond Pipe. He gave a tithe to the church, 1/10 of the profits of that fabulous mine, and he has named his bequest after this, his native village.
Wonderful. First class.
It is the wish of the diocese that I go out and tour these mission stations and bring back to you a report of progress. I shall journey to London tomorrow by car, and then from London Airport.
Oh, where is the man? He really is most exasperating sometimes.
Don't worry yourself, he'll show up.
But that's the plane for Tanzania, standing on the tarmac. Now, he's only got a few minutes.
Oh, let's ask them to wait for him.
I'm afraid they won't do that, May. He's got scarcely 5 minutes before she takes off. There's customs and immigration proceedings to go through.
Oh, it really is too bad of him. Where can he be?
Please, a moment. Where can I hire a car or something?
Car? Hire a car? Why, no, sir. I don't know.
My dear man, where is the next village?
Behind thee, sir.
I mean in front of me.
Oh, that I can't say. I be a stranger, you see, from Wemsbury Parver. That's 5 mile away.
Oh, it isn't any use, is it? I'm too late anyway.
I say, want to lift?
Oh, yes, indeed. It's frightfully important. You see, I'm catching a plane this morning for...
Okay, jump in.
Now.
Where?
In that ridiculous old car.
Oh, his own must have broken down.
Well, whatever's happened is too late. And the plane's about to take off,
oh,
I'm afraid.
Too cruel, it really is. Oh, the poor vicar.
Have I missed my aircraft?
Oh, you have. Never mind, there's another leaving tomorrow.
Look! Look at the plane! There's something wrong! She's crashing!
Does he have powerful friends? Let's find out, shall we? Personally, I like playing with the tarot cards, but it isn't much fun from the fortune-telling point of view. Because, you see, my future is behind me.
Vicar, there's a gentleman from Scotland Yard to see you, Inspector Stone. He's with Mr. Matthews now in your study.
Yes, I shan't be a moment.
Oh, tell me, Mr. Matthews, did you go to see the vicar off at the airport?
Yes, Inspector, I did. I don't mind telling you how envious I was. I know East Africa and I like it. The great Tom Shelby was my half-brother, you know. Well, that's luck. If the vicar had boarded that plane...
Yes, exactly. Do you know him well, sir?
The vicar? Yes, fairly well. Why?
Can you keep something under your hat?
If I have to.
Well, that aircraft was sabotaged. And don't ask me how or why. There was a Tanzanian cabinet minister aboard. Perhaps they were after him. In any case, the only passenger who didn't quite make it was your vicar. But his baggage got aboard, didn't it?
But surely you can't mean that.
Carter? Why not? He must be a suspect, mustn't he?
Well... Technically,
But then there's no motive for him blowing up a plane full of people, is there? Unless he's mad.
It's quite unthinkable. I can tell you plenty of stories about him. I've seen the way he cries when he's seen a mouse caught in a trap. He wouldn't as much as shoot a partridge for his dinner. No, you're on the wrong track, I'm afraid, Inspector.
May, I'm going to lay out the tarot cards again.
Oh, you're mad! Hasn't it caused enough trouble already?
You aren't thinking very clearly, my dear. The cards warned of the accident. They didn't cause it.
Fear the things of night. The wolf, the bat, and the leopard. Isn't that how it went?
Then there was a bit about telling the truth or evil coming. Yes, I might get another message.
Just let me look out of the window. We can see the vicar's house from here. Yes, the light is still on in the study.
Is the police car still outside?
Yes.
Oh, but they've been with him for hours and hours.
That poor man is plagued by the most awful misfortune.
Well, I think he was extremely lucky this morning. Don't you? With a little less than his luck, he'd be... where the other victims are.
Lay out the cards.
Very well. One touches them. I don't know why, but I've seen gypsies do it.
If you want to know, it's a sort of spell... A heathen ritual. They're horrible, aren't they?
I find them fascinating.
I can see that you're in accord with them somehow.
You know, May, I do feel that I am. I felt it from the first time I held them in my hand.
Harriet, where did you get them?
I bought them from an old gypsy woman. She told me they were true cards. Of course, I didn't believe her. Not then. She showed me how to use them.
I wouldn't have had the nerve to go down there alone.
Shh. Just a moment. Something's coming through. Read. Read me. Something like... Read me plain. The mud stinks and bubbles blue under the stream hot sun. He who would win this has already lost. He who has lost has won.
Harriet. Ah!
Now, I want you to go over that bit again, Mr. Simmons.
Oh, dear, I'm dropping off to sleep.
You want the swine caught who blew up that aircraft, don't you?
Yes, yes, you know I do.
Then give me your cooperation. You came down the road towards 12 Trees Junction, and there something went wrong with your car. What went wrong, sir?
I know nothing about cars, Inspector. There was petrol in the tank, little lights were burning on the dashboard. Well, that's all I know. It just stopped.
But I always thought you knew quite a lot about cars. You used to do your own repairs when you was a lad.
Alas, I'm a lad no longer. You can't compare a car of those days with a modern box of tricks.
No, I suppose not, sir. Now, how did this car stop? Did it just cut out? Did it splatter or what?
Spluttered, I think.
You think? Don't you know, sir?
No, I can't remember. I am far too tired.
Now, let's come to the Tom Shelby estate. How long has Tom Shelby been dead?
6 weeks, that's all.
Do you know how much he left?
Oh, it must be a colossal amount.
With the mine's earning potential, $1,000 million wouldn't cover it.
What a lot of good one could do with that money.
Can you imagine a man who wanted to do good to the world so much that he'd sacrifice 100-odd people for it? The greatest good of the greatest number, as it were?
I can't imagine a man so monstrous. But I'm perfectly prepared to believe that he could exist.
Yeah. Do you know who is the beneficiary under the will?
Oh, I've no idea. And I refuse to answer any more of these silly questions. I don't care who benefits. Although I'm sure Tom will have left a tithe for the church.
So you don't know who's the beneficiary? Why, you are, Mr. Simmons. You are.
What is going on here?
It's Harriet. She was telling fortunes or something, and it happened again, and she screamed, and then she fainted.
Oh, the silly fool. Hasn't she caused enough trouble with dabbling in this sort of thing? Oh, help me with her, will you? If she'd seen the sort of thing that happened in Africa when you meddled with this divination nonsense, she'd think twice about it. Oh, put her head down.
She just said something very strange.
How dare you chatter about this kind of evil filth? I'm going down to the village inn for an hour, and when I come back, I want that woman out of my house.
Very well, Ralph.
Vicar, good night to you. I can let myself out.
No, I shall see you to your car. I feel like a breath of fresh air in any case.
Oh, as you wish, sir. You'll understand that it's my business to get to the bottom of this matter.
What a terrible business it is, too. My sympathies are with you, Inspector. Have no fear.
That's a fine night, sir.
Yes, yes. On a night like this, I can hardly believe there's such a thing as evil in the world. If only...
Down. Get down, man.
Oh. There he goes. He's running off. It's as though a door had opened and released evil upon the world.
Oh, there's big money involved. And big money means big risk. That's the beginning and the end of it. Now, I'll get on to shortwave and have a call put out for that fella. An armed guard for you, sir. Night and day.
Oh, I'm coming. Oh, good morning, Mrs. Heyman. Please come in.
I was told your servant hadn't arrived and that you'd no one to look after.
Not in the mundane sense, no. It seems there's someone looking after me, though, for I've escaped death twice in 24 hours.
I read the cards again last night.
Oh, I think that was rather foolish of you. However, I must admit they did warn us truly on the first occasion.
Yes, that which flies but is not a bird.
I rather think that refers to a bullet, not an aircraft. We still have the things of the night and the penalty for telling lies. However, I'm not too greatly worried.
The next warning makes no sense to me at all. I, I remember it very clearly, but it still makes no sense.
What was the warning?
A sort of garbled verse. The mud sticks and bubbles blue under the steam-hot sun. He who would win this has already lost. He who has lost has won. What could that possibly mean?
Well, I don't think that's very difficult. Diamondiferous clay is often called blue ground. That must be the blue mud referred to.
And the hot sun, that's Africa.
One would suppose so. Now, he who would win has already lost. That's clear enough. The person who was trying to obtain possession is fated to disaster, while the man who is most disinterested has already gained possession.
But who are these people?
I only learned for the first time last night that old Tom Shelby left me his entire gigantic fortune.
Oh, then you're a rich man.
No. He who has lost has won. You see, Tom did that because I always befriended him. He did it because he knows I'm unmarried and will remain so, that I'm a man of extremely simple tastes, that it therefore stands to reason that I shall use this money to advance what we both like to think of as the true and moral aims of life. My dear Mrs. Matthews, whatever is the matter?
Ralph is dead.
Oh, my dear, I'm very sorry for you.
You wouldn't be. If you knew he tried to shoot you last night, that he caused the deaths of all those people.
I cannot judge him, May. The temptation was very great.
He told me the entire thing. He put the bomb in your luggage, then he tried to shoot you. I don't know what to say.
He must have been stark, raving mad.
He was Tom Shelby's half-brother. He believed he should have inherited the mine.
Oh, of course. Everything would have gone to him if the vicar had died before the will was probated.
Yes, I suppose it was something like that. But of course he was mad, too. In any case, it's all over for him. He had an accident cleaning his shotgun.
Oh, my dear. At least that's better for him and for you.
Don't say that, Mrs. Heyman. There's no man so evil that he cannot contain a spark of supreme goodness. Now all is explained.
Except for one thing. The cards. How on earth did Harriet get messages from the tarot cards?
I have no theories, ladies. I have nothing to say.
They won't speak through me again. Before I came here, I threw them in the fire, and my heart was lighter to see them go.
That was very wise of you. There is always a price to be paid for magic, and the price is too high to pay.
Collapsed like a pack of tarot cards. Would you like a pack? You can get them here, behind the creaking door.
The Creaking Door, on Tuned to Yesterday, a syndicated broadcast from South Africa from the 1950s. This is an hour of horror on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Now time for a broadcast of Escape with a very familiar story, though not as familiar to radio listeners at the time it was broadcast. It's an adaptation of Daphne du Maurier's story, The Birds, which Alfred Hitchcock would turn into a major famous motion picture in 1963 with Tippi Hedren and Rod Taylor. This broadcast features Virginia Gregg and Ben Wright, heard on CBS on July 10th, 1954.
Tired of the everyday grind? Ever dream of a life of romantic adventure? Want to get away from it all? We offer you Escape.
Escape, designed to free you from the four walls of today, for a half hour of high adventure. You are in a farmhouse on the southern coast of England, the autumn countryside around you desolate and bleak. And you know that in the dusk outside, waiting patiently for you, silently watching for you, is an enemy from whom there may be no escape.
Listen now as Escape brings you Daphne du Maurier's story, The Bird.
On December the 3rd, the wind changed overnight, and it was winter. Until then, the autumn had been mellow, soft. The earth was rich where the plow had turned it. I didn't do the plowing, no. My wartime disability had seen to that. They gave me mostly the lighter repair jobs to do in the 3 days a week that I worked at the farm. A bank to build up, or a gate to mend at the far end of the peninsula where the sea surrounded the farmland on either side. Deborah and I had taken a cottage up here to try again, for the sake of the children. And it seemed to be working fairly well. I enjoyed my work on the farm. It was pleasant to pause at midday to eat the lunch that Debbie prepared and brought to me. We'd sit there on the cliff while I ate, and we'd watch the birds.
So many of them, Nat.
Yes. Well, the autumn's better than spring for watching them.
Oh, why?
Oh, well, in the spring, they're content, they're full of purpose, they know where they're going, there's no delay. But then in autumn, it's different. The birds that don't migrate seem to follow a pattern of their own.
Pattern?
Great flocks of them here on the peninsula. Restless, uneasy, wheeling, circling, coming to rest, and flying again. The land birds and the gulls down there in the bay. Strange sort of rhythm in their movements.
They don't really go anywhere. Doesn't seem to be any purpose to it.
No. Well, if there is, we don't see it. Restlessness. They're more restless this year than usual, it seems to me. Do you know, this morning two gulls flew so close they knocked off my cap?
Yes, sir. Yesterday when the school bus let her off, there was quite a few of them overhead, as if they'd been followed.
Oh, well, I suppose it means a hard winter. They always seem to know. Perhaps a message comes to them in autumn. A warning.
About winter.
And about death.
No.
Many of them will die, and I think they know it. Perhaps they feel they have to spill their emotion out before they die. Like people who know their time is up and run about stupidly driving themselves.
I wish you wouldn't talk like that, Nat. That black side of you that stirred up the trouble between us before.
Well, I'm sorry, Debbie. But it's come over me lately as I've watched them. The land birds mingling with the sea birds in a sort of strange, unnatural partnership. Land and sea. Life and death. At night it turned colder. And the wind strengthened. Around 2 a.m, the sound of it beating against the house woke me up. I lay there with this slow, even breathing of Debbie beside me, and I thought of Jill and Johnny in the room across the hall. We seemed safe, secure. And then I heard it, a tapping on the window. First, I thought it was a loose shutter, and then I realized it wasn't. Got out of bed, went to the window, opened it. Suddenly, something brushed against my hand and jabbed my knuckles, and then was gone over the roof and behind the cottage.
Ned, what's
it? It's all right, Debbie. It was a bird. I don't know what kind.
Bird?
Wind must have driven it against the window, so. My hand's wet. It's blood. A beggar drew blood.
Good sleep, Nat.
Must have been frightened and stabbed at me in the dark. Well, for the...
Nat, the window, see to it. It's rattling.
I've already seen to it. It's some bird trying to get in.
Send them away. I can't sleep with that noise.
All right. Well, off with you. Why, you little... Stay away from my face. Get out! Get away!
ever in the world.
Did you see that? There were half a dozen this time. They went for me. They tried to peck my eyes.
Oh, that.
I'm not making it up to...
Mommy! What? It's Jill. Go see what's the matter.
Right.
Mommy!
Coming, Jill.
They keep flying at me.
Where's Johnny?
Under the blanket. What's the matter?
Quick, get the children out of here.
Birds!
Yes.
The room's full of birds. And my face!
Get the children out of here and shut the door. Quick! I pushed them out of the room, and now I was alone with the birds. I seized the blanket, and I used it as a weapon, sweeping it right and left. And I could hear the thud of bodies, but they kept coming at me. They were jabbing my hands, my head, trying for my eyes with beaks as sharp as pointed forks. And I wrapped the blanket around my head, beat about with my bare hands, blindly. I don't know how long I fought them. And finally, the beating of wings lessened, and then I was still. I unwrapped the blanket from my face. A cold gray dawn had seeped into the room. The floor was littered with the tiny corpses of the birds. Robins, finches, sparrows, larks. Some had lost feathers in the fight. The others had blood. My blood on their beaks. Sickened, I went to the window. And a fierce sea broke harshly on the bay. But there was not a bird in sight. Not a sparrow chattered in the hedge, no early thrush or blackbird pecked on the grass for worms. There was no sound at all but the east wind and the sea.
Nat?
I'm all right, Debbie.
I didn't know what... You're covered with blood.
Some of it's the birds. Look on the floor.
Oh, so many of them.
Yeah, 50. I counted them.
It's horrible.
Come on, darling. I'll clean the room later when I have more stomach for it.
It must have been ghastly for you.
Are the children all right?
Yes, I've put Jill to work making tea. Johnny's in our bed just now asleep. Nat, why?
The birds? Well, it must be the weather. The sudden change confused them. It has to be that.
The tea's ready, Mummy.
Oh, good.
Did you drive away the birds?
Yes, they're all gone now, Jill.
I hope they won't come again. Perhaps if we put breadcrumbs for them outside the window, they'll eat that and fly away.
Perhaps, dear.
I've already had breakfast. I'd better hurry or I'll be late for the school bus.
Bus? I'll walk with you to the road, Jill.
Yes, I think that'd be a good idea.
I'll go get my coat and books.
I didn't want her to walk alone.
Nat, they wouldn't come back again.
I'll go over to the farm and find out if they heard anything during the night. You keep all the windows and doors closed, Debbie, just to be on the safe side, hmm? Hello? Anyone about?
Mr. Hawkins.
Oh, is the mister around, Mrs. Trigg?
Somewhere's about, but can you tell me where this cold is coming from? Russia? I've never seen such a change, and it's going on, the wireless says. Something to do with the Arctic Circle.
We didn't turn on the wireless this morning. Fact is, we had trouble in the night.
Oh, Kitty's poorly.
No, not exactly, no. We had some trouble with birds. Why, it sounds absurd, but they flew in the window and attacked us.
Attacked you? No, Mr. Hawkins.
No, I'm not making it up, Mrs. Trigg. There are 50 dead birds on the floor of the children's bedroom.
Foreign birds.
No. No, the kind you see about here every day.
Really? Well, you ought to write up and ask the Manchester Guardian. They'd have an answer for it.
Morning, Hawkins.
Mr. Trigg.
Mr. Hawkins has been telling about some birds last night.
Oh.
He says they attacked him.
Attacked?
Hmm.
Are you sure?
Quite.
Never heard of a thing like that before. Hungry, maybe. Looking for food.
Hmm.
You put out some crumbs.
Yes, of course. I'll be up tomorrow as usual. Good morning.
Hmm. Ordinary birds, he says.
Attacked him. Now, what does he take us for, coming around with a story like that? He's a strange one, he is, with those superior airs. You see the look he gave us when we didn't swallow his story? Attacked him. I think he reads too many of those books.
Nat, did you find out anything at the farm?
No. The Trigg's brilliant advice was to put out some crumbs. Debbie, I looked all around this morning. There's not a single bird in sight outdoors.
Quick, they've gone.
I don't know.
And the Triggs had no trouble last night?
Not only that, they clearly thought I was imagining it. Oh, I heard Trigg mutter something about my superior airs and reading too many books as I walked away. Nothing's real to those clods until it hits them over the head.
Well, they're nice enough people, Nat. It's just that they're isolated up here.
Well, that's certainly the polite word for it.
I haven't been able to face going to the children's room. The birds...
Oh, yes, I'll go and clean it up. I suppose the least I can do is give the little beggars a decent burial. I dropped the dead birds into a sack, went down to the beach to bury them. The wind was bitter cold. I dug a pit in the sand with my heel and started to empty the sack into it, but the wind caught the birds and whirled them along the shore. There was something ugly in the sight, but the tide would take them when it turned. I looked out at the crested breakers, and then I saw them. The gulls. Out there, riding the seas. Thousands. Tens of thousands. They rose and fell in the trough of the sea like a mighty fleet at anchor, waiting for the turn of the tide. Waiting. They stretched as far as my eye could reach. They covered the sea. I started up the steep path home almost running. Someone should know of this. Someone should be told. But who? And then as I opened the front door, I saw Debbie beside the wireless listening.
Damage and even attacking individuals. It is thought that the Arctic airstream is causing the birds to migrate south in immense numbers, and that intense hunger may drive them to attack human beings. Householders are warned to see to their windows, doors, and chimneys, and to take all precautions for the safety of their children. Further bulletins will be issued later.
They've been repeating it every few minutes since you left.
Well, perhaps now those empty-headed idiots at the farm will know
Nat,
that I was...
You sound almost glad.
Oh, don't talk rot, Debbie. It's just that when people with half a brain try to tell me
can't
that I...
Can't you forget that superior attitude of yours, even now?
Don't use that word superior to me. I'm sick of it.
So am I, Nat. So am I. You... Oh, I'm sorry, dear. This thing has made me a little nervy, I guess.
Yes, I'm sorry too, my dear.
Nat, one of the bulletins said the birds seemed to be waiting. For what?
I don't know. They said the birds are hungry.
What are you doing?
No, the hammer. I'm going to get some boards and see to the doors and windows as they tell you to.
You think they could break in with the windows shut, those sparrows and robins and such? Why, how could they?
I wasn't thinking about the smaller birds. I was thinking about the gulls.
The gulls?
Debbie, have you ever been close enough to get a good look at a gull's beak? There must be 100,000 of them out there, riding the sea, waiting. The rest of the morning, I worked upstairs, boarding the bedroom windows. And I wondered whether they'd take these precautions up at the farm. I doubted it. It'd probably be a big joke to the Triggs. But according to the wireless, it was no joke. At first, some of the bulletins had been light in tone, but as the morning wore on, the concern in the announcer's voice became more and more apparent. Well, after I'd finished upstairs, I took the rest of the lumber down, boarded up the lower floor windows.
What they ought to do is call the army out and shoot the birds. That would soon scare them off.
Debbie, how are we off for food?
Now, Nat, whatever next?
Well, never mind. What have you got in the larder?
It's shopping day tomorrow, you know that. I don't keep uncooked food hanging about. It goes off. But I can put some things in tomorrow.
Tomorrow? It's only 3 in the afternoon and it's almost dark.
What? Why, yes. The sky. It looks so heavy. Nat, what's the matter? You've gone quite white.
Look.
The tide's turned. The gulls.
They've risen.
Circling over the sea. Not a sound from them.
Nat.
I'm going for Jill. I'll wait for her at the bus stop. You keep Johnny inside and keep the door shut. Outside, I looked for a weapon, but a hoe was all I could find. Then I went to the top of the hill and waited. The surf was booming below, and a smudge rose behind the clay hills in the distance. It widened, divided, and spread north, east, south, west. It was a vast cloud of birds. It passed close by, heading inland, upcountry. They had no business with the people here on the peninsula. Rooks, crows, jackdaws, magpies, birds that usually preyed upon the smaller species. But this afternoon they were bound on some other mission. They've been given the towns, I thought. They know what they have to do. We don't matter so much here. The gulls will serve for us. The others go to the towns. And finally the bus came. When Jill got up, I took her by the hand.
What's the hope for, Daddy?
Oh, I just brought it along. Come along now, darling. Let's go home. It's cold. No hanging about.
I want to play a bit in the rain.
Not tonight. Now, come on. No dawdling.
Look, Daddy. Look over there. Look at the gulls. They're flying in from the sea. They're so quiet.
Yes. Do hurry, darling.
Where are they flying to?
Oh, up country, I dare say, where it's warmer.
Don't go so fast. I can't keep up.
Hurry.
The gulls, they're circling. It looks like they're waiting for something.
Yeah, for a signal, an order.
What?
Nothing. Come on, dear, faster.
But I can't go faster.
Wait. There's Trigg in his two-seater.
Looks as though we're in for some fun, Hawking. Have you heard the news? Everyone's gone bird crazy, talking of nothing else. I'm going to take a crack at them with my gun.
Could you run Jill home first?
Oh, yes, of course. Not room for you, too, I'm afraid.
Oh, that's all right. Just get Jill home. Get in, Jill, dear.
Would you like to come shooting with me?
No, thanks. Have you boarded your windows?
No. A lot of nonsense. They like to scare you on the wireless.
I'd board them if I were you.
Oh, go on. You're windy. Well, see you in the morning. I'll give you a gull breakfast.
I watched Trigg drive Jill toward the cottage, and then I followed on foot. The sound made me look up. The gulls were approaching. The order had been given, and the farm was their target. The black-backed gulls were leading, and there were bigger birds. Gannets. Terns. And suddenly one of them dove at me, missed, rose to dive again, and then came the other, six, seven, a dozen. I dropped the hoe, covered my head with my arms, and ran towards the cottage. They kept coming at me from the air with beating wings. Each stab of a swooping beak tore my flesh. I had to keep them from my eyes. And with each dive, they became bolder. And they had no thought for themselves. When they missed, they crashed, bruised and broken on the ground. And as I ran, I stumbled, kicking their spent bodies in front of me. And now their aim got better, closer to my eyes, closer. And then I reached the door of the cottage. Let me in! It's Nat! Let me in! And then, above me, I saw the gannet poised against the sky for his dive. The gulls drew back. Only the huge gannet. The wings folded suddenly to its body, and it dropped like a stone at me. The door opened, and I flung myself in.
Good Lord! What was that?
A gannet. It had split my skull.
Better now?
Yes, thanks. You're quite the wound dresser. Are the children?
In the other room. I didn't want them to see you that way.
No.
Your hands are the worst.
I'll be all right. We'd better all sleep here in the kitchen tonight. I'll bring down the mattresses.
All right. I'll fix something tasty for supper and we can prepare.
Wait. Yes.
That sound. What is it?
The birds crowding against the outside of the house. They're trying to find a way in.
Nat!
Don't. They can't get in. I tell you, they cannot get in. The boards will hold.
For how long? How long?
Stop it. Here.
I'll turn on the wireless. That'll drown them out. Here. There, it's better.
Yes. Anything so I can't hear that horrible rustle.
It's only the food that worries me, Debbie. Now, I've noticed that the birds come in with the tide, but the tide will go out about 9 tonight, and we should have a lull of about 6 hours. I could slip out during that time and go to the farm, see if they can give us something.
Here's London. A national emergency was proclaimed at 4 o'clock this afternoon.
Yes.
Measures are being taken to safeguard the lives and property of the population, but it must be understood that these are not easy to effect immediately due to the unforeseen and unparalleled nature of the present crisis. It is absolutely imperative that everyone remain indoors until further notice. The birds, in vast numbers, are attacking everything in sight. The population is asked to remain calm and not to panic. There will be no further transmission from any broadcasting station until 7 a.m. tomorrow.
It's like this all over, then. All over.
Debbie, about supper, let's forget it. Let's all just try to get some sleep.
Nat, wake up. Nat, they're back again.
What time is it?
A little after 3.
Ah, the tide's come in again.
There's been a queer smell the last few minutes. Rather like burned feathers.
What? Burned feathers? The chimney. I forgot to keep the fire up. They're coming down the chimney.
No.
Where's the oil?
On the shelf.
There they are. Look, squeezing through the chimney. Stand back. Maybe throw the oil on the coal. That'll get them.
Dad. Dad, I can't stand it.
Get me paper, wood, anything it'll burn. Hurry. Their charred bodies kept dropping down the chimney. I raked them to one side, but more came. I threw on the rest of the oil. We found papers on it, kindling, anything. The flames roared higher. More bodies. The stench was unbearable. I kept at it. Finally, they gave up. And I went over to the basin. I was sick. Around 9 in the morning, the rustling ceased. I opened the door a crack. Crushed birds were deep about the house, but there was not a living bird in sight. The tide had gone out. Now was my chance to get food and fuel. I ran all the way to the farm. There was no smoke from the chimney. I came around the corner of the house and stopped in the doorway. Almost covered with dead birds were Mr. and Mrs. Trigg. What was left of them? Beside him was his gun. Beside her, a broken umbrella. I loaded the two-seater with all the food I could find, enough for perhaps 3 days, and drove back to the cottage. I told Debbie that Triggs didn't need their car for a while and had told me to take it. She said nothing. And towards nightfall, the birds came back again. We sat by the fire and listened to the rustle as they crowded against the house. But this time there was a new sound. They brought up their heavier forces against us, the birds with larger beaks. I could hear the sound of tiny bits of wood being torn away.
They'll stay till the tide turns. Then they'll leave. Then they'll come back again. And they'll keep coming back. Nat.
Yes?
The Triggs. They're dead, aren't they?
Yes.
We're all alone. Strange. I feel closer to you than I've ever.
That it should take something like this to bring us. Debbie, you may be interested to know that right now, I do not feel very superior.
Don't, Nat.
No!
I don't know, Debbie. I do not know. I listened to the sound of the splintering wood, and I wondered how many million years of memory were stored in those little brains behind the stabbing beaks, the piercing eyes, now giving them this instinct to destroy mankind with all the deft precision of machines. I switched on the wireless. It was dead. I reached for the cigarettes. There was only one left in the packet. I lit it. I threw the empty packet on the fire and watched it burn.
Under the direction of Norman McDonald, Escape has brought you The Birds by Daphne du Maurier, specially adapted for radio by Robert Reif.
Escape, on Tuned to Yesterday, a CBS radio broadcast from July 10th, 1954, wrapping up this hour of horror on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Thanks for listening.